This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about immigration in high school and high-skilled workers. But up first, Craig Venter's life is now an open book, at least his genes are. This week, scientists published the complete gene sequence of the famous gene scientist. So why is this so special? What makes him special? Unlike previous versions of the human genome, which are comprised of the DNA of many individuals, the DNA in this genome belongs to just one person. Scientists say this genome is the best one currently available, and it's going to help scientists make the connection between genes and diseases, health, and behavioral traits. Venter and his colleagues published the genome online in the open access journal Public Library of Science Biology. And that means you can use the genome for research. And from the looks of it, people are going to do that. Joining us now to talk about Craig Venter's genome and what it means for the future of genetics research is a scientist who's already using the new genome in his own research. Huntington Willard is the director of the Institute for Genome Sciences and Policy at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. He joins us from the Duke campus. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Willard.
Thanks very much, Ira. Good to be back.
Thank you. So what makes this new genome different from all the other genomes?
Well, there were it's important, I think, to go through the list of different genomes that have come available, and it really is apples and oranges. Each genome that has been released has was developed for a different reason and released for a different purpose. It all started in 2001, as you know, when the draft human genome sequence was announced with great fanfare by Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, leaders of the Western world at that time. And that was our first glimpse of what the human genome was all about. It gave us an initial sign of who we are as a species and told us the landscape of the human genome. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't a perfect genome. It didn't give us all the details we needed to have. And the second genome came out in 2003, which was a completion of that draft, filling in the missing pieces, correcting a few relatively few errors that were in the draft sequence. And that gave us a much closer look at exactly how many genes we have, where they are, hopefully what they do. But as you said, that was a compilation, a smorgasbord of 10 or 20 different genomes that together told us who we were as a species. What's been released this week is one individual's genome, and now gives us insight into what it means to be an individual, not just a member of the species, and is providing very different types of insights than the early genome sequences could do.
And this genome includes DNA from both parents, right, as the other ones might not have?
That's right. This includes the two genomes that Craig inherited, one from his father and one from his mother.
Mm-hmm. How will you use this now better? What can you do with this information now that you have Craig's genome? Is anything that you learn from it going to be just for Craig, or can it be applied to everybody else?
Well, I think most of what we're finding can be applied to everyone else. I think it's an unknown question of exactly how much that we're now studying is really just about Craig and how much is other people. That's the kind of research that we need, and that's why we need individual genomes, not just from Craig, but from other individuals as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Our number 1-800-989-8255, if you'd like to talk with Huntington Willard. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Talk. Also, we have a spot on Second Life. You can go to the Scilands section and look for Ira Flatley. That's me giving out Science Friday T-shirts. And you can ask a question there, and we'll get it up on the board also as a way of taking questions. So where do you go from here? What's the next step that you have Craig Venter's genome now?
Well, the first glimpse was to ask a question really for the very first time, which is to say, when we have an individual genome, how different is it from another individual genome? So if for the first time, we now have a sense that that's about a half of 1% of the genome, which is different. But that's a much bigger number than I think we would have guessed before this individual genome had been released. That's five either different or missing or extra pieces out of every 1,000 units of this genome code. And overall, that adds up to something in the neighborhood of 13, 14, 15 million differences between two different genomes, your genome and my genome, or the two genomes any of us inherited from our parents.
So small percentage, but big number.
Enormous numbers,
yeah.
Which could explain much of the differences that we see in each other, both in behavior, in our propensity to develop certain diseases or not, and just in the different characteristics that make each of us individuals.
Let me just ask you a little bit, and I hope I'm not stepping over a line here, about the ethics of someone saying that this is my genome. Craig Venter saying, you know, this is mine. You know, did he go out? Does he go out on a limb on this? How do scientists view this ethically?
Well, I think he certainly does go out on a limb, but I know that for quite a period of time he has had this whole process of studying his own genome and releasing it examined by ethicists, biomedical ethicists who've worked with him and his team, both to raise questions that I'm sure he's now very aware of, that there is some risk in having your information be available to everyone to look at by going online. But also because it does raise a whole list of questions in society about both privacy, a right to privacy. This is sort of the flip side. This is the right to publicity in revealing essentially as many secrets as there might ever be hidden in a genome and letting the whole world look at this.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-989-8255. Jim in Penang, New York. Hi, Jim. Hi, are you there? Jim, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, my question is, isn't knowing the sequence rather a lot like knowing the order of all of the letters in the most recent Harry Potter novel? It doesn't really tell you much about the story.
It has to be decoded, is what you're saying. What
exactly?
What does the map tell us?
Of the smaller genomes that we know, there's a lot of the code that we don't know what it does.
Good question. Dr. Willard, isn't that really the hardest work coming up now?
Well, Jim raises a very good point. At one level, is monumental a task as it is to sequence a genome, that's really the easy step. And it is decoding it and finding out what different parts of that genome do. And we perhaps, at a very rough guess, it's perhaps at most 1% of the genome that any of us understands with any degree of certainty. So that leaves 99% of the genome, Craig's or anyone else's genome, that, as Jim says, is just a bunch of letters that we need to decode. But I would argue, unless we have those letters there to begin to study, just like 100 years ago people were beginning to decipher the Rosetta Stone, you have to stare at that code and study that code in order to begin to make sense of it, whether that be Harry Potter or the human genome.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Good luck. 1-800-989-8255. Justin in St. Louis. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Yeah, just a question about, and I don't know how to phrase it exactly, but the safety or the security of the individual, the privacy of the individual to put their own genome out there. And if this was something to where the science progresses and everybody's going to be able to get this, what might other people or scientists maybe with less true intentions be able to do with this information being out there?
Good question.
Well, that's a good question, Justin, and I think the honest answer, and I think Craig would probably give this very same answer, is we don't know. We don't really know what the risks are, but in that sense, Craig is a pioneer, and I would argue that it's important in a developing field like this that we have pioneers who are willing to put themselves out there and their information and their genomes out there so that society can learn to study and deal with this issue of what actually does a genome tell us. What can we do with it? What do we not want to do with it? And develop that level of comfort over a period of time that may take a decade before more and more people are studying their genome. And at some point, a transition will occur, and I think Craig has said this himself, where the arguments in favor of knowing will outweigh the arguments in favor of not knowing.
1-800-989-8255. Now, I understand that this new genome brings attention to different kinds of genetic variations than had been studied previously. Is that correct?
That's true. And there are, again, because this is a single genome rather than a compilation of a number of genomes, it allows us for the first time to ask what kinds of changes actually account for the number I quoted earlier, which is something like 15 million differences between two genomes. There are large pieces of DNA that are both missing from Craig's genome compared to the other genomes that have been studied, and also ones that are extra in Craig's genome that aren't found in other genomes. That concept that there would be either extra or missing pieces certainly has been known for a couple of years now from other studies. But this is the first time we've known that for a particular genome, and also the magnitude, that's the sheer amount of DNA that is actually differing between two different genomes. As you asked before, how much of that is unique to Craig, this extra DNA or missing DNA? Maybe Craig's the only person on Earth who has a piece of DNA that other people don't have. On the other hand, it may be that half of us have some DNA and other people don't have that. And that will give us a wonderful glimpse, perhaps, into what makes each of us an individual.
Wouldn't that argue, then, for collecting more single-person genomes and studying them?
I think that is the argument, although there are some individuals who would take exception to that point. And what I would what I'm going to say is, so there are a number of individuals, and I do think there really are genome pioneers who are willing to have their genomes looked at in full detail and have that information released. And unless we have those pioneers, we're not going to learn the kinds of scientific clues that we want to uncover in our genome. And more to the point, as a society, we'll not be able to figure out, and as a medical community, we'll not yet be able to figure out how best to use this information for the betterment of all of us.
Mm-hmm. Do you suspect we'll be seeing more of, you know, more of these pioneers showing up in the next months?
Well, I think there's certainly an expectation of at least one other full human genome that has been released but has not yet been published, and that's of Jim Watson, the Nobel laureate who co-discovered the structure of DNA in 1953. And Jim's sequence is also available on the Internet, and there are some striking differences between Craig's DNA and Jim's DNA.
Knowing the both of them, I can't imagine why that would be.
Yeah. And at this point, looking at those differences really is a matter of just sport.
Yeah.
You're chuckling, I'm chuckling. But at some point, that sport is going to turn into real utility, and that's the promise of this approach and of and the importance of having these kinds of pioneers.
Well, Dr. Willard, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Have a good weekend. Huntington Willard, Director of the Institute for Genome Sciences and Policy at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about high-tech immigration. Is there a shortage? We keep hearing about a shortage of high-tech workers in high-tech fields. What about using folks from outside the country come in? We'll get into a debate on that, so stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.